Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. For the rest of this hour, we're going to talk about a 22-year-long citizen science effort that's given researchers a new understanding of the global behavior of endangered whale sharks. New information about whale shark behavior, biology, and ecology is being released today in the scientific journal called Bioscience. The project, called Wild Book for Whale Sharks, invites divers, boaters, and ecotourists to submit photos of whale sharks' unique spot patterns to an online database, which helps scientists identify individual animals. The effort has helped describe 20 hotspots for whale sharks around the globe and has expanded scientists' understanding of these mysterious sharks' lives. I'm joined now by one of those researchers, Dr. Robert Huter. He is a senior scientist and director of the Center for Shark Research at Moat Marine Laboratory and Aquarium in Sarasota. Dr. Huter, thanks for coming on the show again today.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Julie. Thank you for having me.
I feel like I talk with you every couple months. There's always something about sharks going on.
Well, there's always something fascinating happening in our ocean, so it's always great to be on WGCU.
And you're always doing such incredible work, too. You can join the conversation, too, by calling 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So first, tell me a little bit about this 22-year-long study. That's kind of a while to do one of these.
Well, you know, we've learned a lot about whale sharks over the last 10 or 15 years through scientific studies like the ones that we have run down in Mexico on whale sharks, putting out these satellite tags to track their movements. But those studies are very expensive. Each one of these devices to track one shark costs about $4,000 a piece. And the scientists cannot be everywhere around the world, everywhere they need to be to understand where whale sharks are. But people, what we call citizen scientists, people that are out there, ecotourists, divers, fishermen, see whale sharks all the time in many places around the planet. And so this particular project brought together the kinds of observations and photos that average people were making, divers taking photographs, that sort of thing, and we were able to assimilate all this information over the last 22 years into a massive database that from which emerged this picture of where whale sharks aggregate around the world, and furthermore, a little bit more about their movements from one aggregation site to another.
So do whale sharks have a spot pattern on their back that's kind of like a human fingerprint? I mean, you can tell them apart?
Exactly, and that's what makes this particular species of shark so amenable to this kind of study. Most sharks don't have much in the way of defining characteristics that you can tell one individual of a species from another. But for whale sharks, these beautiful polka-dotted gentle giants, actually the largest fish on the planet, their spot patterns are something that they have for life, and they're unique to each individual, just like a fingerprint. So if you take a photo of the spots, and in particular we ask for the left side right behind the gills and right over that first pectoral fin, the side fin, we can match that pattern to a similar type of a photo anywhere in our database, and lo and behold, tell whether Charlie the whale shark, was seen in, say, off of Mexico, was also seen off Belize, and also seen off the coast of Florida. And this is really unique. And what's tremendous about this work is that, you know, people take pictures in all kinds of orientations, and there's different visibility and that sort of thing. So that could be a problem for trying to match up these spot patterns. But we actually have used a computer program that NASA developed for navigating their spacecraft that looked at star patterns in the sky, and regardless of which orientation the spacecraft had, this computer program could figure out where they were in space. We've adapted that kind of a program to take these photos of the spots, the stars, if you will, on these sharks, and rotate and turn and so on the photo so that we can get a match for the same animal taken with a picture taken perhaps thousands of miles away.
Wow, that's incredible. I've been thinking about like facial identification like technology, but you're going all the way to space with this. How did you put those dots together? no pun intended, to get NASA technology involved with whale sharks?
A lot of work by a lot of people, and this was work that was done by other labs as far as the use of this program. These guys came out with this approach about 10 or 15 years ago, and it was in its infancy. And since they published that work, many laboratories have started to use it for not only for whale sharks but other creatures that have some kind of a pattern that can be matched. We have a giant ray in our area called the spotted eagle ray that also has like polka dots on it, has spots, and we've used it for that. But it has to be obviously with some kind of an animal that's got some kind of a unique pattern that it keeps for life, and it works perfectly for whale sharks.
And especially when you have citizen scientists who take pictures in different ways with different types of cameras and different angles and all that. So I think that and over the course of 22 years throughout which technology's kind of changed, obviously. So what a study. So 22 years later, what did you end up learning from this?
Well, what this massive database of photographs, 30,000 submissions to the website. What it showed us was that there are 20 what we call hot spots of whale shark abundance around the world, and they're scattered across all the oceans. They tend to be in the more warm water areas, tropics and warm temperate parts of the world. Everything from here in the Gulf of Mexico and in the Caribbean over to the east coast of Africa and up in the Indian Ocean and then over into the Indo-Pacific. And many of these spots were known before, but not very well described. Some of them were new. But what we also learned was through the identification of individual sharks, we saw that the same sharks were seen in more than one of these places. And so we were able to connect one place to another and say, this is a population that moves back and forth.
Oh, so they're kind of world travelers.
World travelers. Interestingly, not across whole oceans, not from one side of the ocean to another. And that's one of the limitations of this approach, because with the satellite telemetry that we've done on, you know, a few dozen animals, we have seen movements out into the open sea, but they don't go all the way across to the other side. So where people are diving with them are places where these giant fish, these giant sharks, come together primarily to feed, and the rest of the time they're off doing their thing somewhere else. So this is extremely useful information, and it helps augment what we're learning through the satellite telemetry.
And I heard you reference them earlier as gentle giants. What are whale sharks like? They're called whale, which is they're not whales,
yeah,
but they're sharks.
They're not whales.
But then when we think sharks, we think aggressive guys, but they're gentle giants.
You know, I've worked on probably more than 100 different kinds of sharks in my career, 100 different species, and I'm a broadly trained zoologist. It was great to hear your previous guest from the University of Florida. That's my alma mater, where I got my PhD in zoology. And I love animals. I love animal life, as many of your listeners do, I'm sure. These are the largest animals, I think, on the planet that you can be right up next to and not be in any danger whatsoever. They are plankton feeders. These are not predators. Their teeth are tiny. They're almost microscopic. They don't use their teeth for much of anything, really. They strain water. They're like giant cows, really. Really, the term sea cow should have been saved for the whale shark, I think, because they're mostly plant eaters, and they just filter out the water for plankton and sometimes small fish like the baleen whales, like the great whales. But they don't have a mean bone in their bodies. They're just gentle. When they're coming at you, and, you know, 40 feet long and tons of weight, and they see you ahead, they just dive right under you, go around you. You can really have a wonderful experience with these animals, as many people have. around the world. And that was the basis for getting all these photographs, of course.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, they're kind of sought after. I remember years ago going to Belize, and that was a big draw. A lot of people wanted to go out and try to – they wanted to get there at a certain time of year so that they could possibly be able to swim next to a whale shark. What is the biggest
– Well, you know, I've been to Africa. I've been to Africa, and you cannot go walk up, you know, with elephants. I'm sorry. That's not – that's a risky, very risky thing to do. Yeah. You can't really swim with whales. A lot of the whales are very protective, and it's risky. These animals are just so benign. They're so gentle. They really don't care about you. They really just care about doing their thing, feeding. And they're beautiful. They're polka dot in coloration. They're magnificent. We have them off this coast here, and of course we will continue to encourage people to get in touch with us with their observations of whale sharks out here. And I encourage people, when you see a whale shark, when you're out in the boat, go ahead. If you have a mask and snorkel, get in the water with it. Don't touch it. Stay at least 6 feet away. Do not touch the animals, and do not impede their progress. But it's an experience that you will never forget the rest of your life.
Do they move quickly? Because I'm kind of thinking of the sea cow, the manatee, that doesn't get out of the way of boats very fast. Are boats threatening to them? And also, conversely, if they move quickly, is there a threat if you're too close that they might accidentally hit you with their tail?
Yeah, some of them do bear scars of having been hit, and the fins being clipped, probably more by the bigger tankers and liners and so on. And there is a threat in certain parts of their range of of colliding with these bigger ships. And so people need to be careful. They can move somewhat fast when they want to. Most of the time, they're just kind of cruising along. But I'll tell you, you get in the water with them, they don't look like they're moving that fast, and you start swimming, and you're out of breath really quickly. It's hard to describe the power and the grace of these things as they swim. And trying to keep up with them can be pretty difficult over more than just a minute or so.
I've heard that there was one spotted a couple of years ago, at least, and I haven't heard since, so they may have still been there. I just haven't heard yet, but off of Sanibel.
Oh, yeah, they're out here different times of the year. The problem with trying to do any kind of research on them out here off the southwest Florida coast is they're just so rare, and it's so haphazard when they're seen. I mean, we have tried in the distant past, we've tried to have projects where we got reports, and then we tried to get out where the sharks were, typically 10 or 20 miles offshore, and they're gone by the time we get there, and it's just a losing proposition. Off of Mexico, in the summertime, off the Yucatan Peninsula, they come together by the hundreds, and you can fly to Cancun and be at the place where the whale sharks are within a matter of a couple of hours from the airport. And it's virtually guaranteed that you're going to see whale sharks down there. It's a fabulous place to see them, to do the research that we've done over the last 14 years.
We talked a little bit about boats being threatening to them, which isn't definitely not as big of a deal as with manatees. Are there other threats to whale sharks? I mean, what do they have, predators or anything?
Well, they have predators when they're young because they're completely defenseless. You know, as we said, they really don't have teeth that do anything, and they don't have any spines or anything like that. So, when they're born, they're only about 2 feet long or so, and these little babies are there's no parental care. Mom just gives birth and takes off, and they're on their own to start feeding right away, plankton feeding. And if they were born along the coast, they would be gobbled up very quickly by other sharks and other kinds of predators. They're not born along the coast. We don't see them along the coast. We believe, and this is part of the mystery that we're still working on, is that the pregnant females make these long treks offshore to the middle of the ocean, sometimes around islands like the Galapagos, or there's some similar islands in the Atlantic side. And that's where they give birth to their young. And just kind of scattered them about in areas where there's no predators. And by the way, a female whale shark will give birth to about 300 pups in one season. So
wow, 300.
So they 300, and that's known from only one specimen of a pregnant whale shark that was caught in a fishery in Taiwan a number of years ago and opened up, and she had 300 pups inside of her. So we go with that number. Now, speaking of fisheries, fortunately, in this part of the world, we have no fisheries that are going after whale sharks, and they're not caught very often incidental to other fisheries. They're just too big, and they're not going to take anything on a hook. So no worries on this side. But in parts of the Indo-Pacific, even though most countries that encounter whale sharks have made it illegal to land them, there's still some fishing that goes on, some artisanal fishing. Some of these villages see a whale shark is having enough meat to feed the village for a month. And so there's still some problems there, but that is a threat over there, not here. The other threats that they face include pollution problems. And remember that these are filter feeders, so they're straining the water.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the plastic particles.
Plastic is a problem. Imagine an oil spill, trying to go through an oil spill. It would just completely gunk up the filters that they have in their throats for filtering out the food. So during Deepwater Horizon back in 2010, we think that the whale shark population in the northern Gulf was affected. We don't know if any animals died, but we do know that animals moved away from the area, so they knew to stay away. And then global change, climate change, global temperature warming of the oceans is certainly going to affect the distribution of these animals as well. And the dynamics of their food, they go to these specific areas like off Mexico because they know that the plankton population blooms basically in the summertime. If that changes due to global warming, then the whale sharks will have a problem.
So this is the culmination of a 22-year-long study of the whale sharks. Did you uncover any surprises during this study? Did anything shock you?
I think nothing was shocking except as I mentioned before that we didn't have Susie the female whale shark from Mexico showing up off Africa or Charlie the whale shark from East Africa making the trek over to Australia, because these animals are capable of very long distance movements. They really seem to have these homes that they come back to to feed. And yes, there are parts of their life cycle that are not showing up in these photos, but we're just not seeing a lot of exchange across the whole oceans, which means from a conservation standpoint that these comprise separate populations. So the group that's in the Atlantic on the west, off of North America, off of the U.S., Mexico, and Central America, that's its own population. The group that's on the East Africa, that's its population. The group that's in Australia, a separate population. Each one of these then is unique and special and needs to be conserved.
And so they're going to have their own genetic grouping too that doesn't cross or mix. That'll be interesting to see how
that
evolves too over time. Are you going to continue to do this study? Or are you still having people send in pictures?
Oh yeah, it never ends. People, those listening that would see a whale shark, please submit your observations. You can contact us here at MOAT. You can call our number 941-388-4441. The menu will direct you to a choice to report a sighting. But for the overall study, the global study, go to whaleshark.org. Whaleshark, all one word, .org, and that'll take you to what's called the Wild Book for Whale Sharks, and there's a place to submit photos, upload your photos, and submit your observations. And by the way, the photos, they really need to be underwater. The ones from above the surface we can sometimes use, but it's really hard to see the spot pattern. But if you have a GoPro camera that you can put on a stick at your boat and get a quick shot as a shark swimming by, or even better, get in the water with the shark, take a picture, You'll have fun. And
that'll even be more fun.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the time we've got for today, and I want to thank my guest, Dr. Robert Huter, as a senior scientist and director for the Center for Shark Research and the Perry W. Gilbert Chair in Shark Research at Moat Marine Laboratory and Aquarium in Sarasota. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks very much, Julie.
Our show today was produced by Mike and Irie and Rachel Iacovone. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Flight is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.